It's February 6, 2013, and this is the Experience Points Podcast. Are you ready for some football? Podcasting.
Welcome back to the Experience Points Podcast. My name is George Albor.
I'm Scott Juster.
And of course, we are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a site dedicated to the serious but not humorless analysis of games and many games, Scott.
All kinds of games.
Kotaku recently wrote a review for a game, and it is probably, I'm going to say right now, it's the oldest game they've ever reviewed.
It's also probably the most popular game they've ever reviewed.
Oh, easily, hands down.
Yeah.
Have you guessed it, listeners?
That Farm game, Bill. Oh, never mind.
That game is football, of course. And I should say American football.
Yeah, American rules, National Football League football.
National Football League football. This is an article that comes from Tim Rogers, who we will now refer to as T-Raj.
T-Raj.
That's a much better football name. And what Tim Rogers, or T-Raj, says in this article is basically he's professing his love of American football and liking it to a video game. And a different sort of way of looking at how sports are played as a sort of system that's actually quite similar to, in this case, a real-time action strategy game.
Mm-hmm.
The analogy he uses are that quarterbacks are wizards who teleport the ball across the field, that the teams track health through the use of yards. So the closer one team pushes towards your goal line, the closer, the more life you lose, right? And running backs are, what did he say they were? Rogues, maybe?
I kind of forget, because there's kind of brawlers. Like, there's, like, brawler class, which would be kind of the running, because you're just kind of fighting forward.
Yeah, there's, like, a paladin in your tight end.
Yeah. Heavies are the linebackers and various guards.
Yeah. The analogy crumbles a little bit, admittedly, as we go along. But I thought this was an interesting article. Because I play fantasy football, I watch some football time to time, so it's a sport that I pay a little bit amount of attention to. But more importantly, Scott and I, we live in the Bay Area. The 49ers are playing tomorrow in the Super Bowl.
Oh man, we're recording this on Saturday, so this is going to go up on Wednesday.
You'll know the fate.
But, I mean, we already know the fate, because we're such diehard 49er faithful.
I'm going to go
Ravens 34 and 49ers 31.
Well, that's pretty high scoring.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Scott.
Yeah.
I feel like I have to name a number, because on the incredibly off chance that I'm correct, how awesome would that be?
I'm going to predict that the two Harbaugh brothers get in a brawl on the 50-yard line.
Oh, man, I'll take that bet. So there's a few things I want to touch on in this podcast. Some of them include fandom and culture around football and fantasy football and the sort of blend between taking sports and seeing it as a fan experience and looking at sports as a sort of strategic and mathematical experience. I want to talk a little bit about esports. I want to talk a little bit about the similarities and the analogies between systems of fantasy RPGs, which is what they chose in this case, and football, and a bunch of other stuff. But Scott, where do you think we should start?
I think that sounds good. Like the analogy between the fantasy thing, you know, the swords and sorcery analogy that he set up. Because I feel like this is all an attempt to bridge the gap between people who it's perceived that they don't have much in common, except that their games actually probably structurally have a lot of things in common.
Yeah.
You know, like there's this perception that people who, and I think it's, you know, it's not an inaccurate one.
And it's I don't think it's a bad one either. Like I don't think, you know, people who don't watch football and don't like football, they might genuinely not understand it, and of course it's not going to be fun.
Yeah, I mean it's a really complicated cultural phenomenon. I mean, like, definitely. Especially for me, like I've been watching football like forever, for decades, and it's just weird that it's, again, this is all really stereotypical, but there's a kind of you know, Revenge of the Nerds type thing going on where, like, now my Twitter feed on Sundays is full of people that are like, you know, A, talking mess about, like, Tom Brady, and B, making snarky comments about, oh, I guess a football man did a football thing. Like, yeah, we get it. You don't like football, but you like video games, you know?
Right, right. Revenge of the nerds.
And so it's this weird thing where, but you know, if you were to sit those people down, kind of like this article did a pretty good job in doing, like, there's, you know, it is a game. And I think, like, the closest thing to video games, whether, you know, when we're trying to find analogs in other media, you know, people always talk about movies, people sometimes talk about books, people like Michael Abbott and you and me actually talk about theater quite a bit, but I mean, sports is a really, really close cousin to everything we do in video games.
Definitely, yeah. I think Tim Rogers, who we should say is an excellent writer anyway, does a really good job of... I mean, it's hard because I think the analogy is already there, so I don't want to say he invented it, but he does a very good job of just saying, look, this is just a fact. Like, this is the way it is. The game works in a systematic way that is very similar to something that you are likely familiar with if you have any familiarity with strategy games. Mm-hmm. And I'm not the type of person who, like, you grew up watching American football. I grew up watching soccer, right? That was sort of my sport as a kid and growing up. And I didn't get into American football until I started playing fantasy football. And that whole experience completely transformed the way that I watched football because, like T-Raj explains in the article, it's really a game of many small moments of strategy. It's just a moment of intense strategy and action in a maybe, you know, 5 to 10 second moment, and then everything stops, and then we do another one. And that sort of level of constant strategy and trying to outsmart the other opponent is really interesting to watch if you know what to look for.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it is a little bit about experience, but it's also about, and, you know, T-Raj draws attention to this at the very top of the article, there's just so much bullshit around football that detracts from football.
Yeah.
You know, all the advertisements, the constant commercialization of football, the over-the-top narratives that the networks kind of drive into every game, all, you know, the weird, like, cheerleader, like, gratuitous cheerleader shots coming back from commercial and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I can see why all the stuff that has sprung up around football doesn't make it. It's kind of like, honestly, like, it's kind of like the fighting game community or the, you know, the MOBA community. Like, there are things around those games that make it hard to get in those, to get into those games that really have nothing to do mechanically with the games themselves.
Absolutely. And for American football, it's, you're even in a more precarious position because there's such a history of commercialization and association with the military and association with higher education that's been really problematic over the years and remains problematic, right? Like, there, not a year goes by where there aren't accusations of cover-ups on rape scandals or accusations of taking high school kids out and giving them money and trying to bribe them to come to your college, right? Like, these things trickle down real far.
Well, and I mean, we went to a college, like, you know, I mean, it's... Cal is not doing the greatest at college football these days, right. But when we were in college, we were pretty good at football, and the athletes are treated differently than the normal schmucks like you and me.
Yeah, I mean, and I went, you know, I went to Cal with some of the football players in, like, the summer program before I ever started, and right off the bat, like, before they were required to be there from day one.
Yep.
All of their classes were decided for them. Half of them were sports classes related courses.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, you know that this is it's like a different social status, a different economic status. Like, these are people who are being groomed for a system that's already just waiting for them. And it's
very few people besides football players on campus have 30-foot billboards of themselves around town.
Right, right. And it's pretty rare for that to be personified in games. And I think, like you said, the only time you can really see that is when you see things like Evo or some of the League of Legends champions that are really trying to build up a persona for themselves.
Yep.
And it's weird because they sort of almost have to do that in order to have a sort of popular acclaim, at least in terms of matching the sort of cultural norm that is around sports fandom.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's such a weird experience that for people who aren't used to it or for people who maybe have a natural revulsion to some of that, it comes off as really unappetizing.
Yeah. And people that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised, like, if the people that don't really enjoy football that much come to games for a more experiential and narrative reason. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's why the networks try to make a huge thing out of, you know, the interpersonal stories of the players, is because people like stories and people want to relate to people. And even if it's some dumb story, like, you know, Nathan Drake looks for a treasure, like, there's more story.
How dare you, Scott?
Sorry, Nathan. There's more story there readily available and prepackaged for you than there is if you just boot up Madden and do something, because you have to kind of, you know, actually get into it rather than step into something.
Well, what do you think then about T. Raj's discussion of a story around football being the stories about coaches, the stories about comebacks or season-long progressions from an underdog to a Super Bowl contender?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, that's what makes it exciting, you know, but all that stuff takes so much investment. You know, you have to follow the team. You have to actually look at the matchups. And it's also really hard to know who contributes to what, especially in a game like football where, you know, obviously Tim Rogers is biased towards the coaches. But, you know, there's just a lot of different ways you can attribute success on a football team. And so it's hard to know who to pick as your heroes. Mm-hmm. Whereas in a more singular sports game or a video game, you know who the heroes are and you know what the stakes are, and you don't have to actually do outside research to understand that when the game is going on.
Right. Yeah, definitely. So also related somewhat to the sort of story or narrative around teams, some of the pushback that I've, or maybe not even pushback, but some of the conversations I've had with sports fans or team fans in particular over the years, especially after I started playing fantasy football, is this idea that there's a difference between these casual fans of football and a true fan, right? And I think that you get this idea from Tim's article a little bit, that when you're thinking of football in this way as this sort of strategic game, you can appreciate a game no matter who's playing, right? What you're interested in this case is a game that's well played, right? So do you think that there's a bridge between the people who watch one team because that's what they're into, they're Niners fans or they're Cowboys fans, and people who watch football for the strategy of it? You know, like, it was interesting.
Like the people who play StarCraft versus the people who watch StarCraft tournaments streamed from Korea or whatever.
Like, yeah. I mean, in Tim Rogers' article, he mentions that when he watches football, he puts it on mute, right? Yeah. For a lot of fans, that would be absolutely unheard of. That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, there is, who knows, like, he also said that he sits in kind of like a meditative lotus position or whatever. Like, it's like, but I mean, like, the joke is there to illustrate the point that he is there for, you know, the structural portion of the game,
right,
just as much as the personal investment in his kind of tribal affiliation with his regional team.
Right, you know? But it's not easy to have one without the other when you're talking about football.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess it depends. I'm of two minds of it. I think that, honestly, like, I think looking at football like a video game and, like, systemically like that, unless you are actually involved in producing football as a coach or as a player or something like that, I'm a little uneasy because I think it dehumanizes the game a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that's why I don't really like fantasy football all that much, because of philosophical reasons, not necessarily mechanical reasons. Mm-hmm. Because if you start looking at things too statistically like that, you start to lose the athletic portion of it, and then it just becomes a game of stats rather than understanding where those stats come from.
But doesn't that also sort of come out of fandom anyway? I mean, you got people who, you know, booed Alex Smith however many years ago because they put a realistically probably too much pressure or too much hope into this one person to salvage the 49ers, right? Like, you get people who still dehumanize players because what they want out of them is an idol, you know?
That is true, but I think fantasy football takes it to a new level because you don't really need to know anything about the athleticism of football to play fantasy football. You just need to get lucky and pay attention to last year's stats. Mm-hmm. And there's a pretty good article by Chuck Klosterman at Grantland that he wrote earlier in the fall called The Chris Johnson Problem. Mm-hmm. And it was about the, like, you know, you're commodifying people basically, and you don't really care about them as athletes or anything. You just care about them as numbers. And so everyone's opinion of Chris Johnson, who was a running back that had a really good year and then he didn't really have any more good years after that. Like, all he is to people is a piece of equipment that failed to live up to expectations.
Yeah, I read that article as well, and I kind of agree. I just don't see that being that different from normal fandom of football in general, or even team sports. Like,
well, normal fandom of football, you know them because you follow the team.
Right,
and fantasy football is, you don't even, like, what team is Chris Johnson on?
I mean, I have no idea.
There you go. But at least you know Alex Smith is on the 49ers because you follow the team and you care
about
him.
Right, right. But I guess one of my concerns is that American football already creates situations where these players are, like, sacrificing so much of their health.
Oh, yeah,
to the game.
Definitely.
And I don't see that much concern from fans. Like, even the conversations that have happened recently around Alex Smith and Colin Kaepernick, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, Alex Smith basically gave away his quarterback position because he admitted to having symptoms of a concussion.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a sort of this popular dialogue now of, like, oh, he's such a good person because he did this, and it's great, and he should be lauded for it. But part of the flip side of that is that people, I think, are assuming, and probably correctly, that too often injuries go unreported for fear that people will lose their positions or fear, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
It's already problematic. I don't know how much fantasy football pushes it that much further than that.
I mean, again, like, unless you're involved in the means of, like, actually directly producing it, you know, it's really hard to track how much influence fantasy football has of, you know, spreading the popularity of football.
Yeah,
anecdotally, for sure. I know a bunch of people who now pay attention to football because of fantasy football,
mm-hmm.
but they still don't really know much about the mechanics of the game. Like, if I were to ask them, like, what is the penalty for pass interference, they probably wouldn't know.
Right, yeah.
But they would know that, you know, the best running back to have is Frank Gore. And it's like, well, you just read that off a spreadsheet. Like, you don't actually, you know, it's like yeah. you don't actually know why that is the case. You just know that that is the case.
Yeah, I definitely see that. But
and I think, like, yeah. like the Tim Rogers article does an okay job of trying to bridge that gap because, like, my fear is that I don't want people to look at football like Final Fantasy Tactics, because football involves real people and the stats derive from actual skills rather than computational dice roll.
Yeah, oh, that's yeah, that's a really good way to put it. There are human beings behind these characters.
Right, but and I feel like trying to get video gamers into sports through this way of saying, oh, it looks like this, it's kind of like an RPG, like, that's a good first step, but unless you take it beyond, then you're just exacerbating this problem of the disconnection between the humanistic aspect of sports and athleticism and the product of athleticism, which is points and scores, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I guess I feel like that first step, though, was so necessary, right? Like, I would
it
not...
Is.
I mean,
it is.
Necessary in the sense that if you want people to watch football, period. Like,
right.
if it wasn't for Final Fantasy, I wouldn't watch football. That's just plain and simple.
Right.
And while I don't know all of the intricate rules, I know that when I'm watching a game, I can definitely appreciate it more, way more than I could have before I ever participated in fantasy football, right?
Yeah.
I guess there's a difference even then between people who play fantasy football and are... I mean... Fantasy football is a weird example because that has its own system in place as well that encourages
mm-hmm.
the sort of dehumanizing of the sport anyway. Like,
well,
like
and
you
also
said,
like it encourages the superstardom aspect of the sport as well. Like,
yeah.
you know, unless you're in a super hardcore league.
Well, yeah.
You just, no, for sure. Because, like, how many defensive players do you know?
No, that's very true. But the point being is you have those stars, right? But depending on the size of the team and who you're picking up, oftentimes you're interacting with players that you would never care about. Like, you're picking up tight ends from teams that, like, you've never heard of this guy. And now all of a sudden, like, you might want to watch a Tennessee Titans game because their shitty tight end is going to, you know, do something.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's... I have mixed feelings about that aspect, too, because, like, you're not actually watching the game for the competition.
Well, I think that, yeah.
You're watching the game for your own weird ends, and you don't really care about who wins, and you don't care about the team. You just care about the individual, which is, like,
right.
the exact opposite of what a team sport is.
But I guess that's kind of where I see that bridge between fandom and not fandom having that difficulty, right? Exactly there. Because if you see it as strategy, right? Like, if I were watching an esports event in a team-based combat game, like League of Legends, right? I play a lot of League of Legends. I generally play support roles. So when I'm watching one of those esports events, I tend to focus on the support. What is the support doing? How are they affecting their team? Like, what are they doing well, right?
Mm.
I don't feel like that's that separate from, say, watching a game, not really caring who wins, but seeing how well is this tight end going to do, right? Like, what you're focused on is how well this player fits within that role.
Right.
I mean, you miss the bigger picture, of course, if you're not considering, you know, the way the tight end affects everybody else on their team. That's certain.
Yeah. But that purity is compromised the minute you're doing it because of fantasy reasons.
Well, what do you mean by purity, though?
So, there's also a really good article on Grantland. Grantland has a lot of good articles,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, good stuff.
Especially on sports. I think it was actually Tom Bissell wrote this. Tom Bissell did a huge write-up about the Madden franchise in video games. And he went to Madden's house, who I think Madden lives out in Pleasanton here in the Bay Area, somewhere around there.
He probably lives in a lot of places, Scott.
No, Madden doesn't travel. Like,
oh, really?
Even when he was announcing all those years, like, he doesn't like flying, so he had a bus, and, like, you know, he's not, like, he's not a really, like, travel-heavy dude. And, you know, he coached for the Raiders, so he has, like, Bay Area roots. Anyway, so, like, Madden's retired now, which is funny. On a side note, Bissell says that because he's retired now, he is now more involved in Madden than he has been in many of the previous years because he doesn't have his announcing duties anymore. Right. He pays more attention to the video game. So anyway, so Madden's retired now, and he went to Madden's house, and like Madden has this like command center in his house with like dozens of TVs aligned along the wall so he can watch all of the games at once and like, you know, a constant feed of information from all the games every single week. He's doing that because that guy loves it. Yeah. You know, he loves football. But if he was doing it because, oh, I just picked up Vernon Davis, I better watch the Niners game. It's like, you're not really doing it out of the love of the game. You're doing it to see if you could score $50 off your friends.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, I think in that case, I wouldn't necessarily say scoring $50 is like a pure evil, but you're right. Like,
it's not an evil. I don't mean compromised and purity in the moral sense. I mean it in the kind of chemical sense, like you know, it is a heterogeneous mixture of why you are watching the game at that point.
I think doing anything out of love for it is an admirable and enriching experience for sure.
Right.
But I guess, how do you get to that point of loving it? Right. I mean,
yeah.
For a lot of people, it's because they grew up with football.
Yeah.
But for a lot of other people, they didn't grow up with football. Like they're coming into this fresh. They're coming into this with preconceived notions about what it means to be a football player, the culture around football. A lot of it, as we've said, is vindicated by what they see in the media, you know, and the realities on the ground. So, like, how do you come to love something? And I think you can love football in much the same way I think you can, like, love a game, right, in that sense. But I think to transition from one culture to the other is not as easy as just saying, oh, look, I can appreciate the strategy, right? Like, something else has to happen. And I don't know what that is, per se.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of it, too, is we want it to happen immediately. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it might not be such that, you know, if you watch it as a kid, you know, it's crucial that you watch it at a certain time of your life. It might just be like an aggregate of years, you know, like you don't really get a sense of anything, like whether it's a video game, whether it's a sport, whatever. You know, you start to get kind of that instinctual knowledge of it after a certain amount of time invested. And that time invested means like you have had to watch many, many years of playoff games where it's like, oh, you know, I can kind of see what they're doing right here. You know, this is exciting because they have X number of timeouts or whatever. Like you start to see patterns and like
an expertise, you know, of reading what's happening, basically.
Yeah. And like to your point, you know, what Rodgers is doing here is trying to shorten that process a little bit. Like if you can speed up that learning curve, then you can get to a point where the excitement that you feel is you don't have to work for that excitement by viewing it through this lens. You know, it comes more naturally.
Yeah.
But I mean, people don't want to wait, and I don't blame them. Like, do you really want to have to watch football for 10 years before you like football? that doesn't sound very fun.
Well, and not everyone wants to become a quote unquote like football person, right?
Yeah,
where every Sunday is blocked off, or you know, they've got jerseys in their folder, their closet, or whatever.
Well, that's also the hard thing, too. I mean, we know this from video games. We know this from sports. Like, I don't watch near as much football as I used to watch as a kid because I just plain don't have the time. Like, you know, I'll check in on the scores every once in a while, but I tend to only follow the regional teams, and I try to catch as many games as I can, but it's not like, you know, it's not like I can't play every single Final Fantasy game that comes out these days either, you know?
Yeah. I'm in a weird position because, you know, I grew up watching soccer, but I was never, you know, I'm not one of those crazy fans on that side either.
Your vuvuzela?
I do have my vuvuzela. I mean, you can never give away your vuvuzela, Scott. But for the most part, I am one of these sort of casual viewers. I don't love football per se, but I like it. I like watching it. I'm not to the point nearly the point of, as far as you or Tim is, but I also do the same thing for cycling, for example, which is like something weird that I started doing like a year ago. It's like every now and then I'll watch a cycling match. And there's, I don't know nearly as much as people who are cycling aficionados, but I know enough to realize that there's some in-depth strategy going on and there's some really interesting personal dynamics going on, and you can find something worth watching in that. I haven't found that for basketball yet.
For cycling, hold on.
Okay.
What's that one cycling thing where they don't want to get in front of each other, so they're trying to pedal as slowly as possible? You know what I'm talking about?
Sort of. Yeah.
I mean, there's like a certain type of sprinting race where it's not in your best interest to sprint first because then the other person knows when they need to push harder.
Yes, yeah. And well, so, and then there's also the general rule of drag, right? Like the person who's in front is working the hardest out of everyone else in the peloton.
This, I should put a video to this in the post because there are some hilarious pictures of like one-on-one bicycle battles where like
they're just slowing down a lot.
Yeah, they're trying to go as slow as possible because they don't want to be the first person to make the break because the second person will always have the advantage because they'll know how much they need to regulate their power because they'll be able to see the front person make their, you know, make their adjustments.
Right. This is why I think this example is perfect, right? For someone who doesn't know what they're looking at, they like log on, right? And they're watching this cycling race and everyone's going super slow. And you're like, what is going on? This is so boring. I'm not going to watch this crap.
Yeah.
If you know even enough about it to understand the sort of dynamics going on right there, it could be really exciting at 5 miles per hour. you know, and I only have time for so much sports. So it's like cycling, soccer, football, and some esports. I don't, you know, there's golf and basketball I will probably never be into.
Right.
But I don't doubt that for people who know what to look for, there's something really valuable there.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the interesting aspects of this article, or one of the interesting reasons I wanted to bring up this article in the first place, was this idea of, like, can we have sort of mutual learning, right? Because we have people in esports who are trying to grow that community and have it be taken seriously by people who aren't normally into video games, right? Right now you have people who are not normally into football getting into football. Can we funnel that backwards, right? Can we, what sort of mutual lessons can we learn from the two sort of competitive communities and the way that we watch them and talk about them?
And there's also some like very basic things, like over the years football has just become easier to watch because it is now filmed more like a video game. Those fancy digital lines that are on the field now showing the downs, like that didn't exist back in the 90s. And
we have earlier. Madden to thank for that.
Like, seriously though, like, I mean, like, football now looks more like Madden does and did than ever before. The commentators now have the option of highlighting particular players and showing, you know, computer generated route markers. And there's even, they've even gotten to the point where real time during the action they have like a floating icon over particular players to point them out.
Yeah,
like literally the same thing that happens in Madden.
Yeah, or they'll like highlight their body, they'll give like a reddish hue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's like that stuff makes it easier for people to understand what is interesting, like more so than Madden just like scribbling some stuff on the teleprompter, because like that stuff's entertaining but it's not necessarily very enlightened, you know, like when you're looking at X's and O's or whatever. But pulling that stuff from another medium just makes it, you know, way more readable for people.
Yeah.
And then like conversely, I think esports, like I don't follow very many esports at all. I'll catch the odd fighting tournament, but I think the development of announcers and color commentators is a huge thing that's happening in esports right now. Because like I don't know anything about it, so I need the StarCraft Madden equivalent, you know?
Yeah, the personality who will be there, and people descriptive and entertaining.
Right, yeah. Someone who will be knowledgeable but not condescending about it, and approachable but not simplify it to obscurity, you know? Yeah.
Even now, occasionally I'll watch a competitive esports event, and something will happen, maybe a character will be picked that they don't expect, and they start laughing, and then they never explain why.
Yeah,
and you get this weird situation where, for someone who might not be into that same event, they'll have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, it's like, what's the joke, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I watch enough football to know how well of a job those announcers do. Like, if you just took Madden and, you know, said, Madden, comment on this Dota 2 tournament, like, would he do a good job?
Well, you gotta stop feeding him here. He's coming down the lanes. Boom! Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think part of that is just time, and yeah. I think it will be interesting because, you know, it's funny because football and esports, I bet the career, the lifetime career time is probably pretty similar.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, once you're in your, like, late 20s as a football player, like, it's sunset time, you know, like, and a similar thing, probably even more extreme with esports, right? I mean, like... Yeah. We're way too old to play esports.
Because you get those finger injuries, you know? Like, no coming back from that.
No coming back from that carpal tunnel. Performance-enhancing clicking skills.
Before we end, I saw something really funny. I was watching a League of Legends tournament, and for the first time I noticed, after the match, they had one of those huge TVs like CNN has, and then they were drawing on it with like a yellow digital pen.
Right.
Giving like a play-by-play.
I mean, I think that's great because someone like me, who's pretty ignorant of it, like needs that. Like, I can't instinctually follow it yet, you know. So it's, you know, that's perfect. I like it.
Cool.
All right. Well, it's interesting. I think the next few years are going to be really neat too. I think
for football or esports, or the Niners in particular.
Well, the Niners for sure. Let's see what the cap has to do like this next year. I don't know. Whatever. I'm on record as a Kaepernick skeptic, but you know that's just me being a hater. But I just think that those two things are converging, and you know the types of people that watch esports, and I want to see that Venn diagram basically. Like I want to see how the overlap shifts, and I think because of technology and because of you know people have more of a choice of what they view and how they view it. It's never been easier to get into something like that. And so I think, again, like we're kind of on this weird cusp where we could actually have a lot of overlap.
Yeah. And I think that's something we'll probably see more accessibility with the next console cycle as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, if that stuff is baked in and the Twitch channel is right there for whatever tournament, like you could easily have something like that.
Well, it is now. In fact, Microsoft announced that Call of Duty Black Ops 2 instantly streamable to Twitch, no matter what. I mean, you know, if you've got a 360 and Black Ops 2, you can stream now.
Yeah. You know, we'll have to see what happens to the culture around it. Like, maybe that will help the anti-commercialization of it because, well, I mean, obviously it'll get more commercialized, but when you don't have, like, a set time to do it and you can stream whenever you want, you don't fall into the trap that football has fallen down into of, like, being a slave to advertisers.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point because at this day and age, you know, football's not going to be breaking the norm anytime soon.
No,
but there is a chance for esports to take a slightly different path.
All right, well, now that I'm all pumped up, go eat some guac.
Eat some guac, yeah. Or we could be crying right now. It's Wednesday and just so sad.
Oh, yeah, that's true. If the Niners lose, we're just going to scrap this entire podcast.
Well, on the plus side, it'll be easier getting into work. So, win-win
quite
for me,
true.
Scott.
Quite true. All right, everyone. As always, you know, we welcome any kinds of emails, questions, or comments or suggestions. Our email address is experiencepoints@gmail.com.
And, of course, experiencepoints.net is the website. You can give us your play-by-play of this podcast in the comment section to this post. We update the site Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday evenings. And, of course, iTunes and Stitcher is where you can find us and leave us a review.
Vote for us to get into the podcasting Hall of Fame, you know? Like, we need those votes.
Oh.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening, and take it easy.
Bye-bye. We're just going to buy those votes.
We're going to blackmail those votes because I know who's been doping.
T-Raj?
T-Raj? No one can write that fast.